Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. Since a lot of Texas history in the 1820s and 30s had to do with the Mexican government understanding or misunderstanding what it was supposed to be and do, and the struggles in the consciences and among each other in the Texans, knowing what to do in relation to government and into forming government. I thought I'd have us read this important passage about government and our rights and responsibilities regarding government. Romans chapter 13. We'll read aloud verses 1 through 7. Angela, would you please start us? And then each of the three of you read one verse in turn until we've read Romans 13, 1 through 7.
Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God.
Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves condemnation.
For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same.
For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil.
Wherefore ye must be subject, not because of wrath only, but also for conscience' sake.
For because of this you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing.
Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor.
You can tell that the primary thing being addressed is all of us Christians in our relationship, in effect, upward to those in government authority over us. But it's a pretty widely held traditional American interpretation of that to say that the apostle is at the same time instructing those who are in government authority as to what their God-ordained duty and responsibility is. We are to submit because of this. Then in telling the because of this, he also gives instruction to government authorities about their duties. All right. I'm sure that last Tuesday, about this time, you felt a strange sadness that you were not getting the quiz. But to relieve your sadness, we will have a quiz today. Then you can feel better again. Some simple questions just to make sure that we're listening in class, reviewing notes, redoing the assigned reading. Question number one. In the early 1830s, were the settlers of Texas in favor of remaining part of the state of Coahuila y Texas, or were they in favor of establishing Texas as a separate state? In the early 1830s, were the settlers of Texas in favor of remaining part of the state of Coahuila y Texas, or of establishing Texas as a separate state? What prominent man, formerly governor of Tennessee, entered Texas in 1832? What prominent man or famous political figure, formerly governor of Tennessee, entered Texas in 1832? In the Mexican national election held 1832-33, who was elected presidente without opposition? In the Mexican national election of 1832-33, who was elected presidente without opposition? When the second Texas consultation of April 1833 proposed a state constitution for Texas, who carried the proposal to the Mexican capital? When the second Texas consultation of April 1833 proposed a state constitution for Texas, who carried the proposal to the Mexican capital? Vice President Gomez Farias, in office starting in 1833, does our author describe him as an honest supporter of the Constitution or a scheming, corrupt dictator? Vice President Gomez Farias, Vice President from 1833, does our author describe him as an honest supporter of the Constitution or a scheming, corrupt dictator? All right, let's grade ourselves. 1830s, Texians were in favor of?
Establishing Texas as a separate state.
Prominent man, Governor of Tennessee, entered Texas 1832?
Sam Houston.
Right. Mexican election of 1832 to 33, who became president?
Santa Ana.
Who took the proposal for statehood to the capital?
Stephen F. Austin.
Mm-hmm. Vice President Farias, how did our author describe him?
Honest supporter.
Order of the Constitution, yes. Okay, friends and neighbors, we have the matter of reviewing our official timeline. And so what we'll do is, I'll choose one of you at random to start, and then you have to go around each one of you reciting the next one in order. Okay? You began the reading. This will not be at random, but it'll work. You began the reading, so you begin the timeline. And each of you say one all the way through.
1528, Tobacco Lands at Galveston Heights.
1541, Coronado enters Texas Panhandle from the west.
1542, DeSoto Expedition enters Texas from the northeast.
1685, LaSalle lands at Attaborda Bay.
1718, San Antonio Mission, Presidio, and Villa are established.
1803, Louisiana Purchase is made.
1819, Eastern Border of Texas established at Sabine River.
1821, Moses Austin receives a grant to form a colony in Texas.
1824, Mexican federal constitution is passed.
1827, Coahuila y Tejas state constitution is passed.
1830, Bustamante.
Bustamante takes power.
Takes power and establishes a narrow policy towards Texas.
And pursues a narrow policy toward Texas. Well, that was nice, friends. Okay. Here are some new items for your official timeline, and I'm afraid we have four new items.
Okay. Making up for your time zone.
That's right. We had no new items while I was talking on and on about the constitutions. Okay. I'll read them first, and then I'll set the paper out here for you all to copy them down. 1832, first Texian consultation meets at San Felipe. Also 1832, Santa Ana restores constitutionally elected President Pedraza. 1833, Santa Ana becomes President of Mexico under the 1824 Constitution. 1833, second Texas consultation proposes statehood for Texas and sends Austin as its delegate to Mexico City. There you go. So you can get those down word for word. you're noticing that the items on our official timeline are getting closer together. Mm-hmm. You know, the first couple of ones, you know, we've got something that happens, and then the next one is 100 years later. As the time of Texas colonization keeps going, events important to learn in history become closer and closer together. You know, for a lot of those years in between, it was, you know, 4,073 buffalo moved through, you know, pursued by 23 Native Americans. And all, you know, I mean, those people's lives were important and everything, and important to them. But as for things important to remember for history, very little happened, you know, for hundreds of years at a time, and then for decades at a time. But once we get to the 1820s and especially 1830s, and people are pouring into Texas by the thousands, things really get to happening. It's nice to have some authentic Texas music to accompany our Texas history class.
To Mexico City.
Now, 1824 to 1828. You know, 1824 was the Mexican Federal Constitution, 1827 was the State Constitution, and during those first 4 years, the government was forming, the federal government operated more or less constitutionally, and then things got really interesting in 1828. How interesting. You know, in some previous classes I've thought to say, here's what was going on that you know about in other parts of the world. At this time, I forgot about thinking about like that for this class, but that's an excellent point to raise. 1828. So the time period that we're talking about here, 1824 to 1828, Noah Webster's working on his dictionary. Very good. Which, of course, we can think of as the dictionary. This is the most important dictionary ever that should have just settled things. So then, 1828, the presidential election. The two leading candidates were Pedraza and Guerrero. And Guerrero was more popular, more people, and in effect received more of the popular vote.
How do you spell that name?
G-U-E-R-R. E-R-O, G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, Guerrero. However, in the system set up by the Constitution, Pedraza was legally elected. Their system of presidential election was not identical to ours, but had some similar features that allows for representation of the states, not just representation of the people. You know, if it were just all the people's votes are all tabulated, and whoever gets the most votes, then, you know, that person wins as president. That's different from the system that they had and that we have, where states vote and a candidate can win that. Can win a state, and then that state has electors that go to an electoral college, and there is some balance there that's established between the votes of the people at large and the votes of the people of a state over against the votes of another state, and so in their system. According to their constitution, Guerrero was more popular, but Pedraza actually won the election, was actually constitutionally elected. So the next year, 1829, when the new president was supposed to take office, guess who? General Santa Anna installed Guerrero as presidente instead of Pedraza. He had the military backing and the popular enthusiasm to be able to install Guerrero instead of Pedraza. Now, this was revolution. You know, this was overthrowing the constitutional government. Except it was popular. And so the people in general liked what he did. And so it worked. However, it set a very dangerous precedent, and sure enough, in 1830, at least under the pretense that Guerrero was not legally the president, Anastasio Bustamante seized power from President Guerrero. Bustamante, you've been saying his name in your official timeline for a while, since we put 1830 Bustamante into your timeline. So Anastasio Bustamante was ruling as head of the government, not elected president. He and the Cortes under his leadership increased taxes and established military bases for the enforcement of the taxes, including in Texas. A policy was passed strictly limiting immigration from the United States of America into Texas. Of course, the immigration into Texas for the last several years had been primarily from the USA, and now that was made virtually illegal. Two military commanders were given jurisdiction over Texas. General Turan, T-E-R-A-N, was made the Commandant General of the Eastern States, including Coahuila y Texas. And then under him, Colonel John Davis Bradburn, which, that being a very English name, it rings to ears like he should have been one of the Anglo-American settlers, but he's not. He was a Mexican army official. Colonel John Davis Bradburn was made commandant of a fort at Anahuac. You've read about that already. A-N-A-H-U-A-C. That fort was established to control the port at Galveston. Ships could come in at Galveston. It's near present-day Houston. Anahuac is near present-day Houston, although not, you know, exactly. So the fort at Anahuac was established and maintained under the command of Colonel John Davis Bradburn to gather the taxes that the Mexican government wanted to take in from Texas. All of this was new. These taxes being enforced, this army base being manned for that purpose.
And illegal.
Pardon me?
And illegal.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure whether, how much of that was legal or not. Since the president was illegally the president, I suppose you could say all of his actions also were illegal. So then, during 1831, those military authorities, General Turan and Colonel Bradburn at Anahuac, more and more established a military rule over the civil authorities. Very they established, in effect, a martial law. Martial means of or pertaining to war. They established a martial law over the civil authorities. You know that one of the biggest things for the Texas settlers was having deeds to the land that they claimed. You know, under the system of impresarios being given grants to bring in settlers, people were entitled to land. But they really needed official government papers showing their entitlement to that land. They needed deeds. So the state government, government of Coahuila y Texas, appointed a surveyor, a land commissar, commissioner. But as he was out doing his work of surveying and assigning people official deeds, he was arrested for it by Colonel Bradburn at Anahuac. On the grounds that it was in violation of the law from the previous year, making it illegal for settlers from the U.S. to come in. Of course, many of the settlers who were there already had been in and were entitled to their land. So that was a great offense to the settlers. During the time that Colonel Bradburn was commandant, our author tells us that there were numerous offenses committed against the Texans by Colonel Bradburn and the soldiers under his command. We know that when there are soldiers, when there's a military attachment that is present among the civilian population, there is a tendency for the soldiers, because they can, to take liberties with the settlers, to do things to them that are criminal. And there has to be a very strong system of justice so that the soldiers are afraid to do anything illegal, just like common criminals are to some extent afraid to do anything illegal. But that is, you know, history tells us that's hard to keep that correct. There was trouble of that nature in the 1770s in Boston and in a lot of other places and a lot of other times. As I understand it, there's, you know, there's been trouble at various places, even with the U.S. military personnel, which are at present stationed in lots of places in the world. And there have been incidents where the U.S. military personnel were alleged to have committed crimes against the civilians, and then the civilians had trouble bringing the military personnel to justice. And so apparently, according to our author, the soldiers from the fort at Anahuac were committing crimes against the Texian settlers and were not being held accountable for it. And then that led to big trouble in 1832. Now I'm going to go to another subject. This is kind of what we have to do in this Texas history class. You have to go from what's actually happening in Texas over to what's happening in the capital, in the national capital, because it's going to have such effects on the what's happening in Texas. In January of 1832, now this is when Bustamante is still illegally in power. The garrison at Veracruz made a pronunciamento in favor of the Constitution. They denounced the Bustamante government and called on Santa Anna to assume command. Now, there's a lot of theories, I think our author holds to this, that generally anything you hear going on with Santa Anna mentioned, it was probably at his conniving that these things were happening. But be that as it may, the form that it took was that the military garrison at Veracruz called on him to take command and write things so that an effort was begun January of that year, 1832. We're going to have a lot of things in 1832. In January of that year, the military and political effort began there at Veracruz to get rid of Bustamante. Now, back in Texas, okay? Back in Texas, and the Texians, a lot of them live within reach of that fort at Anahuac, and even the ones who don't really need to go down to Galveston to buy and sell. And so a lot of the Texians have to have dealings with Colonel Bradburn and that garrison at Anahuac. There was an episode where a soldier was caught by the settlers doing something criminal, and they punished him themselves. The settlers who caught him punished him. I don't recall what it was that happened. Did any of you take note of that in what you read? What he did or how they punished him? Well, Colonel Bradburn retaliated against the soldiers and arrested three of them, including William Travis, who would later be in command at the Alamo.
You said soldiers. Did you mean Texans?
Arrested three Texian settlers. Sorry, the word settler and the word soldier are coming out of my mouth at not necessarily the right moment. So these three Texians, including William Travis, were being held at the fort at Anahuac. And at least 60 men from the Texian settlers organized themselves and marched to attack the fort and besieged the fort. And a public meeting was held about this nearby at Turtle Bayou. And the Turtle Bayou resolutions were passed. And it's interesting statements criticizing the unconstitutional conduct of Bustamante and this local commander. It's a very interesting glimpse into the sentiments of the Texian settlers. They are objecting to what's been done in terms of it being unconstitutional. We have a constitution of 1824. Neither the person in power in the capital nor the military commander on the scene here in Texas is abiding by the constitution. And interestingly, they mention the heroic support of Santa Ana for the 1824 Constitution. We are, very much appreciating Santa Ana and how he is resisting these encroachments against the Constitution. In July of that same year, 1832, another paper was put forward talking about the tyrannical and illegal acts of Colonel Bradburn, and again expressing the Texians' support for the 1824 Constitution. And this finally, this was resolved by Colonel Bradburn being relieved of command by the Mexican authorities and sent away. There was further military struggle in the summer of 1832 in which the Texian settlers found themselves allied with factions of the Mexican military that were loyal to the 1824 Constitution, fighting against other factions of the Mexican military loyal to Bustamante. Interestingly, the Texians were on the side that Santa Anna was on. And whether you were with Santa Anna and the Constitution became the question of which side you're on in this military struggle in Texas in the summer of 1832. It was during this time that Jim Bowie became prominent as a military leader.
Sure, there's quite a lot of interesting people going around here.
Yes, it is. Those who will, several of them end up at the Alamo a few years hence. So in general, in the summer of 1832, the Texians, took up arms. The militia organized and operated effectively, cooperating with portions of the Mexican federal military to, for the most part, clear Texas of the illegal government operations and military operations that had been established under Bustamante and General Turan and Colonel Bradburn. Now, at the end of the summer, 1832, specifically October 1st through 6th, we had the first Texian consultation, or first Texas consultation.
What were those dates?
October 1st through 6th, 1832. Now, I took down three items that I read about what happened with that first Texian consultation, which was at San Felipe, the capital of the Austin colony. They petitioned for the repeal of that prohibition on immigration from the USA, which was passed under Bustamante in 1830 and was so troubling to the Anglo-American Texas settlers. They petitioned for repeal of that. And they expressed, they defended or justified their loyalty to Mexico and its constitution. It was a question all along during the 1820s and 1830s, whether the Texas settlers were just trying to steal Texas from Mexico. Stephen F. Austin, every input of his was always along the lines of the fact that he and the other settlers were loyal Mexicans, and they just would be happy as Mexicans as long as the Constitution is upheld. And so that's what they were expressing there. I read that, you may have read this too, not all the delegates arrived, the meeting did not really accomplish much, did not end up being very consequential politically. Except maybe for the fact that it was a baby step toward the Texians being able to have such a Congress. They did so successfully the next time, even if the October 1st Texian consultation was not a big success. So still in 1832, remember how we had all that stuff that happened in 1821? 1832 was similar. A lot of important developments both in Texas and in the Mexican capital. November of 1832, the Santa Anna-led force that had begun organizing at Veracruz finally marched on Mexico City. And interestingly, Bustamante, once he was surrounded by the army and faced with Santa Anna, was then very agreeable to relinquishing power. How about that? Tyrannical rulers who seem to be unflappable in their commitment to power somehow become real agreeable once they're under arrest. Santa Anna and Bustamante agreed to install Pedraza as president. Remember, this started back when Pedraza was actually elected president, but Santa Anna revolted and installed Guerrero because he was more popular. But now, a few years later, Santa Anna is now agreeing with Bustamante to install Pedraza, who was the actual elected president. But then there was still a lot of tumult over this because the Cortes, or Congress, would not agree to that. Bustamante left Mexico City as part of his deal with Santa Anna. And Santa Anna was viewed as a hero of the Republic and the Constitution. It was largely his fault in the first place that we did not have the constitutionally elected president for the previous years, but he being the key figure in restoring the constitutionally elected president, he got the reputation as being a Republican and a hero of the defending the Constitution. Now, still in 1832, still making our way through 1832 here, December 10th, 1832, Sam Houston crossed Red River into Texas, near Jonesboro. Remember learning about Pecan Point and Jonesboro? So not that far from here, Sam Houston crossed from Indian Territory, now Oklahoma, into Texas. You know, I talked about Santa Anna putting Pedraza back in power. I think I got ahead of myself because from November and December were the events of that, and it was actually December 26th, 1832, that Pedraza was finally installed as the president as like he had been elected to. Now, you know that he had been elected back in 1828. By the time he was finally installed, his term was up. So there needed to be, you know, a new election.
One was slightly illegal.
Everything being done was illegal, more or less, right?
Go for this person, he's doing something slightly less illegal.
Right. Now, the elections were supposed to take place in 1832. You know, the president elected every 4 years, like what we have. Mm-hmm. And so the elections having been, you know, messed up by events, they were then eventually held in between, in the various states between late 1828 and March of the next year, 1833, the elections were held. And there was virtually no opposition to the election of Santa Anna to be president, who then became president in 1833. It's not that there would have been absolutely nobody opposed to him, but there was very little opposition. So then, in 1833, there is the second Texas or Texian consultation.
Wait, what?
In 1833, there is the second Texian consultation. And this one is better organized. There are two committees, one to draft a constitution, and Sam Houston was made the chairman of that committee, a state constitution for a new state of just Texas, you know, not Coahuila, Texas. And another committee was elected to write a letter to the federal government and Burnett, I forget his first name, was, no pun intended, Burnett, B-U-R-N-E-T, was elected chairman of that committee and wrote that letter. And three people were chosen to take the letter and the proposed constitution to the Capitol. But Stephen F. Austin, one of the three, was the only one actually who went. I bet it's known, but I don't remember. I read that part. What did it say? I don't remember it saying why. Now that makes me ready to talk to you about your reading assignment for this week, which I accidentally skipped again like I always accidentally do. Of course, you need to review your class notes and the official timeline for the quiz next week. But also, your reading assignment is this. Now, I'm going, you know, I always post these notes on the internet on the sermon audio page where I post the lecture audio for anybody who misses it. And so you can look at this on the computer later. You don't have to get all of this down. I'm not going to try to tell you the long, you know, internet digital address of this. Let me talk to you about what it is. Stephen F. Austin, you know, the point we just got to in this history is that Stephen F. Austin went to the Capitol with this proposal from the second Texas consultation. He went in 1833, and he was eventually arrested by the vice president and held in prison for quite a while. And during that time, he wrote a letter to a person last named Perry, August 25th, 1834. And hello.
I apologize for interrupting. I'm looking for Robin.
She's in that room.
She's over there? Okay, good. Thank you.
And in it, Stephen F. Austin tells some of the history of what has happened to him when he went to the Capitol in 1833, and he expresses some of his principles, and it made for very interesting reading. So, letter from Austin to Perry, 825-1834. And I might email your moms that link, or it should at least appear here under the assignment in the notes once they're posted on the internet.
Wait, what was the year of that?
The letter is 1834, talking about his experiences up to that point, starting in 1833. So I would like to kind of, you know, recap. Let's kind of ponder a little bit what's been going on here. We had a very, very promising developments in the passing of the 1824 and 1827 federal and state constitutions. We have a few years of more or less peaceful government, but then upon the second presidential elections, there start to be unconstitutional goings-on at the top level of government in the capital.
I don't quite know how to follow rules in Mexico.
Exactly. There's that cultural thing being put there. Those who are at the top can just make the rules, and the peons just have to obey the rules. And that was, you know, the movement toward making Mexico like that was begun, you know, way back when the Spanish conquistadors first came, and when the Spanish missionaries, along with the Spanish military, started domesticating the natives in the way that they did. You know, we say this, imposing religion, making them do things that they didn't even understand or believe in, and creating a nation of people who could be ruled like that. Here's what we powerful people tell you it's going to be now. And some of the more enlightened were able to get through an excellent constitution, but then it did not have the force of the will of the whole body of the people to make it actually work.
And also, wasn't the author saying that they got rid of the very intelligent upper class Spanish people who are really helping everything?
Right.
Being more,
right,
civilized.
A lot of them ended up having to flee. Some of them ended up actually in Texas. You know, there's an interesting little quote from the passing of our present USA Constitution. When the Constitutional Convention was over, had been decided on, when Benjamin Franklin emerged, apparently some person in the crowd outside the hall where they had been meeting said, "Mr. Franklin, what kind of government have you given us?" Have you heard this? His reply was, "A republic, if you can keep it." A republic, relatively difficult to keep. Even if it has been established, which is hard enough in itself, then even harder to keep it. In the early years of our present U.S. constitutional government, you know who was the most popular person, the person who was recognized by all of the military as their hero and leader, and who was elected president with hardly any opposition?
George
Washington. And he was a person who scrupulously followed the new Constitution, was conscious of the fact that he was setting precedents that would be followed, very carefully tried to set precedents that would be good for the maintaining of the Republic. He intended to serve only one term and then retire, but then it seemed necessary to him for the stability of the whole thing to be willing to be elected to a second term, which he was. But at the end of the second term, he was begged by everybody to remain, to be elected president again, or just to be made king, and he refused both and peacefully allowed the election of a successor and retired. That precedent had been set and would have been known by the Mexicans going through the same process just a few decades later. But their main popular military leader, national hero, was not George Washington. It was Santa Anna, a person not of the same convictions and strength of character. So, from
different intentions, generally, probably.
From very near the beginning, he was conspiring to have things go ways that would be good for him and his people and power, And so rather than the keeping of their new constitution, there was the overthrowing of it almost before they had begun. And as one of you, I guess Audrey was saying earlier, if everything that they're doing is more or less illegal, it's hard to get the whole country to agree on what should be done now. Okay, well, if we didn't install the legal president, somebody else is now president. Is it legal to overthrow the illegal president? Well, yeah, I guess so. And then what do you do? And you know, and if we didn't have the election we're supposed to have, now what do you do about that? And so basically once anything is illegitimate in the government, then it's very hard to get it back to where everything is legitimate. So the Texians were not of that same mind, that same character. You know, the Texians, as you know, were, for the most part, people from the United States of America, where these principles had found their best expression in our Declaration of Independence and our War for Independence and our setting up of our republic and our passing first of the Articles of Confederation, then our present Constitution, the going through years or decades of some tumult, but an insistence by all parties on the Constitution, and so that they did not think any of this was okay. You know, to have the person who's not been elected president installed by the most popular military general as president anyway, and then have everybody say, well, I guess that has to be the new plan. You know, the Texians are not okay with that. And then for whoever's the strongest and can seize power to appoint his people to do the taxes and whatever, and you just have to do whatever they say because they're the army, that's not okay with the Texians. Maybe they could get away with that in most of the rest of Mexico. And when there's a nation of people who their whole heritage is, here's the Presidio, and you've got to do whatever the governor and the priests and the military say, you've got to do that. That's been their whole culture for 100 years and more. Not so the Texians. Their heritage has been, if the king and the parliament are not ruling according to the Constitution, then we, you know, throw all the tea in the harbor and we, you know, we're willing to go to war to pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to keep ourselves and our posterity in liberty. And so, as our author mentions a couple of different times, there ends up being this real cultural difference between Texas and the rest of Mexico that is seeing, it's going to shooting and killing now. In the summer of 1832, you end up with the Texians having to organize themselves in militia companies and actually go, you know, besiege the army forts because of the corruption, etc. This is what we're going to see more of as the 1830s go on.
Go with them in their one cannon and go around doing
the thing. Yeah. All right, that's all for today, my friends. Thank you.